this morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Most of you already been served. Most of you finished your breakfast. Is this somebody's phone? Okay.
Hello.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for coming to have breakfast with me this morning. I really appreciate your taking your time out of this very, very busy day that we all have ahead of us to be a part of this wonderful breakfast. I'm going to give you an opportunity now to, if you want to turn your chairs around, you may want to. We've enjoyed this great breakfast. Let's stand up for a few minutes, and as you stand up, look around your seating area and find at least three people that you know without a shadow of a doubt you're better looking than they are and shake their hands. I know it belonged to you. Okay. Please be seated, guys. And if you still have breakfast in front of you, please feel free to continue eating. But for those of you who are finished, I'd like to have your undivided attention for the next 35, 40 minutes. And I want to thank Hap Kellogg for that very kind introduction. And I want to thank the gathering for inviting me to be a part of your day. You know, gentlemen, looking back about 30, 40 years ago, I wish somebody had invited me to a breakfast like this. I can guarantee you it would have saved me a tremendous amount of pain in my life. So I'm going to ask you to put the cares of your busy day out of your mind for the next 40 minutes. Because I'm going to get down, we used to say in the Marine Corps, I'm going to get down and get real dirty. Because I want to share some things with you today, guys, that not many years ago I wouldn't have even shared with my best friend. Because I want all of us this morning to leave here in the next 40 minutes. I want us to leave here maybe thinking about life in a little different way than when we came in here. So continue eating if you need to, but please, at least one ear. As Hap mentioned, I am a part of the Adolph Coors family. Most of you have heard of the name Adolph Coors. This brewery of ours was started by my great-grandfather, Adolph Herman Joseph Coors. An interesting guy. Let me just share a little bit about my great-grandfather. He lost both of his parents when he was just 15. And he was trained as a brewer in his native Germany. And in 1868, gentlemen, with just 7 pennies in his pocket, not able to speak one word of English, one day boarded a steamer headed for this great country of ours, couldn't even afford to buy a ticket, with a dream in his heart, and that dream was to start a brewery in this great country of ours, which he did in 1873. And this brewery became quite large. But in 1914, something happened in the state of Colorado that caused his little brewery to begin to crumble before his very eyes. And what happened in 1914 was Prohibition. And Prohibition became a law in Colorado in 1914 and became a national law in 1919. And for the next 14 years, he couldn't produce beer out of his brewery. And he began to see his little empire slip through his fingers, an empire that he had put all of his money, all of his fortune, all of his time, all of his effort into. And then in 1929, the Great Depression hit our country, and that was really the death knell for this little company called Coors Brewing Company. And in 1929, in the spring of that year, my great-grandfather in Virginia Beach, Virginia, took his life, jumped out of a six-story hotel building to his death. Now, why do I share this, guys? I share it for one reason, because my great-grandfather had put his faith and trust in the wrong place. May I suggest to you this morning, gentlemen, we are not what we do. You are not your career. I am not my career. If your identity is in what you do from 9 to 5 every day, your identity is in the wrong place. And 55 years ago, I was born into this very successful family. A very close-knit, a very loving family. I was surrounded by two older sisters, a younger brother, and I was blessed with two wonderful parents. I want to take you this morning to a cemetery outside of the town of London, England. We're walking through this graveyard, and we are suddenly stopped dead in our tracks when we read a grave marker which says this: "She died for want of things." And right next to it, another grave marker reads: "He died trying to give them to her." She died for want of things, and he died trying to give them to her. Two lives spent believing that the things of this world could make them happy. Gentlemen, I'm going to ask you a lot of questions this morning. Do you honestly believe that the things of this world can truly satisfy you? I believed that lie for 30 years of my life, and it nearly cost me my family and my own life. You know, to most people, life consists of a materialistic if only. And this is so true in Southern California, is it not? If I could only get that raise, that additional money would make me happy. If only I could buy that new home would make me happy. If I could buy that bigger boat is going to do it for me. You know, I used to be enamored with famous families as I was growing up in my family. I used to read about famous families in this country. And one day, I came across a comment spoken by John D. Rockefeller Sr. just before he died. And John D. Rockefeller Sr. said, "I have made billions, but they have brought me no happiness." Henry Ford Sr. cries out before his death. He says, "I was happier when I was a mechanic." And then Cornelius Vanderbilt says, "The care of 200 million is enough to kill anyone." 200 million. Why were these obviously successful families able to say this? For the same reason you and I can say it today. Because, gentlemen, when we're born into this country, we're born batteries not included. We have a God who creates us, and he creates us with something missing right here. I call it a spiritual vacuum. You can call it whatever you want, but there's something missing in each one of our lives. The year was 1958, and my father, let me introduce my father to you. He was chairman of the board of our brewing empire. My father was a remarkable man, Adolf Coors III. Not only was he the chairman of the board of our brewing family, he was a gifted athlete. He was a semi-pro baseball player. He was an architect, an engineer. He flew his own airplane. He pioneered the development of skiing in the state of Colorado. Those of you who have skied in Aspen have a lot to thank my father for. He developed that little mining town back in the late 40s. He was a visionary. He was a remarkable man. I wanted to be just like him. Gentlemen, in a sense, my father was my God. The year was 1958, and my father moved our family from a home in Denver to a beautiful home on a cattle ranch that he owned 20 miles west of Denver, into a home that he designed himself. And for the next 2 years, life went along pretty well for us. You know, gentlemen, we take for granted the things we should give thanks for every day. And I took my family for granted. However, 2 years after we moved into this beautiful home, one morning on his way to work, it was a cold February, typical winter morning in Colorado, my father was kidnapped and brutally murdered. 14 years of age, my father disappeared for 7 long months. We didn't know whether he was alive or dead. The FBI was called in to try to find the person who perpetrated this horrible crime. It made national, international headlines. Gentlemen, I need to tell you that from the day I was born, my life revolved around the Coors family tradition. And now, on that fateful day in February of 1960, my life took a turn that I was not prepared for. I ask you a question this morning, guys. Who is your God this morning? Let's be honest. Who is your God? Is it your career? Things are going real well in Southern California, I hear. A lot of prosperity. Who is your God? Is it your checkbook? Your bank account? Your good looks? Your golf swing? Your toys in the driveway? Your wife at home? Your kids at home? Nothing wrong with these things. Nothing wrong with them at all. But who is your God? I had 14 years of my dad, gentlemen. And the one thing that I remember to this day was that as busy as he was, every afternoon when he came home from work, he was chairman of the board of one of the largest breweries in this world. He was a very busy man. He always took time to spend with us, his family. Gentlemen, I suggest to you this morning that at the other end of life, we're not going to wish we'd spent another day at the office. There won't be enough toys. There won't be enough bonds. There won't be enough stocks. There won't be enough toys in our driveway to compensate for the loss of our family. There simply won't be enough. The choices we make today, gentlemen, will affect our tomorrow. And I beg you, guys, I don't know any of you, but I beg you, and I know you're very successful people, and you are to be commended for your hard work. But please, every day, carve a little time out for your family. Please do that. That's what my dad did for us. He taught me how to throw a curveball one Saturday afternoon when he probably would have much rather been fishing or hunting. He taught me how to throw a curveball. He taught me how to fly his airplane before he was killed. He taught me how to hunt. He taught me how to fish. He taught me how to be a dad. I graduated from high school not long after my father was murdered. I wanted to become an attorney. At the age of 17, I was accepted into one of the best law schools in the state of Georgia to begin my 4 years of pre-law. At 17 years of age, I walked onto this gorgeous campus. But gentlemen, there's something about Southern girls. Instead of majoring in pre-law my freshman year, I majored in the Greek system at this beautiful university. I majored in fraternity my freshman year. I majored in sorority my freshman year. And I minored in academics. Oh, there's one thing I need to tell you about my family. The most important part of the Coors family is education. That's how all Coors men are judged. The education that you receive, how smart you are, how good you look, how well you perform on the athletic field. These were the criterion upon how I was going to be judged. At the end of my freshman year, with a .6 grade average, I returned home to my mother and my sisters and my brother, a failure in my family's eyes. That summer, a cousin of my mother's appeared at our front door. He was a career Marine, a full bird colonel, He was a Marine of Marines, served in World War II in Korea. And this man ate nails for breakfast. And he sat me down one day and he said, "Adolf Coors, do you know where you're going?" And I made a mistake and I said, "No, sir." It was not long after this conversation that one Friday night I found myself on an airplane traveling to a city not far from here, San Diego. Do you know what's down in San Diego? What's down there in San Diego? Yeah, the Marine Corps Recruit Training Depot. I stepped off that airplane. I just turned 18, gentlemen. I stepped off that airplane that Friday night, and I was greeted by two of the ugliest men I'd ever seen in my life. And these guys, I mean these guys, literally grabbed me by the back of my shirt, and they dragged me out into the parking lot of the San Diego airport, and they picked me up physically and threw me in the back of a pickup truck. Yeah, you're right. The Marine Corps Recruit Training Depot was about a mile away from that airport. At 18, I stood tall as a Marine Corps recruit. Anybody been in the Marine Corps before? With the name Adolf Coors, I was in boot camp maybe 30 seconds. And I made a decision. I was going to die in this place if I didn't get pretty tough. Back in the early 60s, when I went in the Marine Corps, men literally were dying in boot camp. They can't do that today, but back in the early 60s, men were dying around me. And so over the next 6 years as United States Marine, my body weight went from 195 pounds to 275 pounds. To fill the void in my heart, I made a decision to become the best Marine the Marine Corps had ever produced. Oh, by the way, sir, I had a cousin who was a commandant during the Korean War, General Lim Shepard. And he was also looking down my back, saying, "You better not fail this assignment, boy." And so I came through the Marine Corps, 275 pounds, and martial arts became my god. To fill my void, I began to get involved very heavily into the martial arts. If I could put up a big enough wall, you could never hurt me ever again. You don't believe that for a minute, do you? That you can get tough enough and big enough that nobody can ever hurt you again. I hope you don't believe that. You see, gentlemen, pride goes before our destruction and a haughty spirit before a man's downfall. You know, we wouldn't worry so much about what other people think of us if we know how seldomly they do. All right? Just before I was discharged from the United States Marine Corps, about 6 years later, I got a call from my mother one day informing me that my oldest sister living in Glenview, Illinois, the proud mother of a brand new baby son, that morning went in for a routine physical. The doctors took an x-ray and found a little bump right here on her neck. And it turned out, gentlemen, that little lump on her neck was a form of cancer that was incurable back in those days. I ask you another question this morning, gentlemen. Is your passport for eternity in order? Is your passport for eternity in order this morning? My sister needed her passport for eternity 13 months later at the age of 28. She stepped from this life into the next. Gentlemen, this is not all there is. This is a training ground. That's all this is a training ground for where we're going to spend eternity. That's all this life is. The psalmist David, 3,000 years ago, said, "Our days are very few and they're very brief." It's been said that a man is incomplete until he's married, then he's finished. A recent survey found that single people die earlier. Marriage is healthier. And I came to the conclusion that if you're looking for a long life and a slow death, get married. But the real truth, gentlemen, and you know it as well as I do, that the marriages that are the happiest are the ones in which each partner believes that he or she has gotten the best. And I returned home after my tour as a Marine, and 33 years ago I married my high school sweetheart. I wish you could meet my bride this morning. BJ is her name, as Hap mentioned. You know, gentlemen, 33 years ago, walking out of the aisle, down the aisle of this gorgeous church in downtown Denver with the girl of my dreams on my right arm, I had a sick feeling in here. Had I married the wrong girl? No. But I really wondered whether my beautiful bride could really make me happy. I ask you another question this morning, gentlemen. Do you really believe that that beautiful wife waiting for you at home tonight, do you really believe that she was created to make you totally happy? Do you really believe that? No, your mate wasn't created to make you totally happy. You know, we're funny as human beings. We spend money we don't have to buy things we don't need in order to try to impress people we don't even like. Isn't that true? And that describes the first 8 years of my marriage to my beautiful bride. While she was busily trying to change me, hello, while she was busily trying to change me, I began to bury myself in materialism. I graduated 4 years later with a degree in one of the best business schools in this country. And I made a decision upon graduation that the mighty dollar was now going to fill my void. My marriage wasn't filling my void. And so I was going to become a millionaire, a multimillionaire. A dollar was going to fill my void. Not long after I graduated from the University of Denver School of Business, one Wednesday evening at 10:48 p.m., I was in the delivery room of the largest hospital in downtown Denver. In that delivery room that night were my wife and her doctor and myself. There were three of us. And then poof, there were four. And Adolf Coors V, my first son, came into this world. I was so excited that night that I ran from the delivery room to call my wife, but she wasn't at home. Now you can go home and tell your friends that, yeah, Coors does come in fifth. Hey guys, children are a living message we're going to send to a time we're never going to see. Every day, carve quality time out for those beautiful kids. Every day. In 1973, I went to work for the largest single brewery in the world, the Adolf Coors Company, located in Golden, Colorado, founded by my great-grandfather, 2,000 acres of brewery. That's a big brewery. And I had to learn the business from the ground up. Gentlemen, there were many nights when I wouldn't even return home to my wife and my son. There are many days that I went without sleep. I was determined to become the youngest president the Coors Company had ever seen. That title, president, was going to fill my void. I was so busy, caught up with what this world defines as success, that in the process of the next 2 years, I began to destroy my marriage. I began to destroy my relationship with my then brand new son, Adolf Coors V. I had no friends, gentlemen. I had no time for anything but work. Hello? If I could have enough boats, if I could have enough airplanes, if I could have a beautiful home in the mountains, if I could have all the toys, that would make me happy. She died for want of things, and he died trying to give them to her. Hello? Early one October morning, about a year later, I got into my sports car to return home to my wife and son. I was 275 pounds. I was soon to become a karate master. I thought I had the world by the tail. I thought I was invincible. A big six-figure paycheck. Big six-figure paycheck. Could buy anything I wanted. Go anywhere I wanted to go. Got into my sports car to return home to my wife and son, 25 miles away. Gentlemen, I didn't make it home that morning. 2 miles from home, I fell asleep at the wheel of my car at the crest of a hill, hit another car head on. My body went through the windshield of my automobile. 2 years in recovery from that accident. 2 years. Are you putting your faith and trust in your good health this morning, gentlemen? Don't make that mistake. Each day, gentlemen, is a gift. During that recovery period of time, I began to take a hard look at my life. I want you to take a hard look at your lives this morning. This is a wake-up call for some of you here this morning. This is a wake-up call. I saw a marriage headed for divorce, gentlemen. A beautiful son at home I didn't even know. No friends. Over and over again, I would ask myself, Paul, Adolf Coors, who are you really? Why are you here really? Where are you going with the rest of your life really? And I didn't have the foggiest idea. And then one evening, I invited one of our senior vice presidents home to meet my wife and son. I was training under this man. I was soon to take his position. A man my father had hired 20 years before. He was one of our best vice presidents. Into our dining room that evening came this strikingly handsome couple. Oh, we had dinner that night. We talked about beer. We talked about sports. We talked about politics. All these trivial things we talk about. And then suddenly silence came into our dining room. And then this couple asked my wife and I this question. I ask you the same question this morning, gentlemen. This couple said, Adolf Coors and BJ Coors, if you were to die tonight, do you know where you would spend eternity? And gentlemen, I didn't have the vaguest idea about where I was going to spend eternity. And that night, that couple began to share some things we needed to hear. Now listen very carefully. This couple said that Adolf Coors and BJ Coors, 2,000 years ago, God stepped out of eternity and into time in the very person of Jesus Christ. A fact of history, gentlemen. In other words, 2,000 years ago, God Himself took on flesh and blood and walked among us for 33 years in the very person of Jesus Christ. A fact of history. And that evening we learned that Adolf Coors and BJ Coors were born very sinful. And so are you. We want to do it our way, don't we, gentlemen? We want to run our life our own way, don't we? But you see, guys, there's a problem here. Because God created you, sir, with a wonderful plan for your life. He has a plan for you. He has a plan for me. But because of our pride and our stubborn self-will, we can't know that plan for our lives. And as a result of our pride and our rebellion against our Creator, when we die, we spend eternity apart from God in a place I don't want to go. A real place. And then this couple gave us the answer to our dilemma. And this answer is very simple, gentlemen. Jesus Christ is God's only provision for our pride and our rebellion. 2,000 years ago, Jesus Christ, gentlemen, died a real death for you and me on a real cross. A fact of history. God made Him who knew no sin, gentlemen, to become sin for you and me. So that in Him we might become the righteousness of God. And very simply, gentlemen, what this couple explained to my wife and me 30 years ago was very simple. We broke the law, guys, and Jesus Christ paid the fine. But we had a decision to make. And that decision was to reach out and individually receive God's gift for us. I couldn't do it for BJ. She couldn't do it for me. I can't do it for you. And you can't do it for me. We must individually reach out and receive God. I'm going to ask you to do that in just a few minutes. My wife made that decision 3 days later, guys. I saw her change dramatically before my very eyes. I couldn't handle the change. I left my wife. Divorce was going to fill my void. I know of a husband and a wife who have separate bedrooms. They drive different cars. They take separate vacations. They do everything to keep their marriage together. Phyllis Diller once said, "Never go to bed mad when you can stay up and fight." I left my wife and my son. I moved into a hotel in downtown Denver. Divorce was going to fill my void. While I was separated from my wife, a friend of mine gave me a book that I recommend to every dad in this room this morning. It's a book called Do Yourself a Favor, Love Your Wife. Do yourself a favor, love your wife. I couldn't love my wife. I tried for 7 years to love my wife. I couldn't do it. Nor can you. That love has to come from Him. It's a very special love, guys. We can't generate that love. That book also told me that I needed to spend time with my son. That book told me I needed to have true friends. True friend is one who will attend your funeral someday and not look at his or her watch continually. And I had none of the above, guys. Oh, I had all the things the world says you have to be a sick. I had it all. There's nothing wrong with these things, but they don't satisfy, guys. Not permanently. And so one afternoon, separated from my wife, I went to hear a man speak. He spoke for about an hour. And as he concluded his message that Saturday afternoon, I was surrounded by thousands of men and women. This man said this, and listen very carefully. He said, God has given us eternal life, and this life is in His Son. He who has the Son has life, but he who does not know the Son of God doesn't have life, gentlemen. Can it be any clearer than that? Oh, I was living. This heart was ticking. But gentlemen, I had no life. And this man gave an opportunity for everyone in that audience to say a very simple prayer. A prayer we're going to pray in just a few minutes together. And I recognized all my options had run out. I had nothing left. And that afternoon, sitting in my chair in that auditorium with tears coming out of my eyes at the end of myself, I said yes to God's provision for Adolf Kulis. And gentlemen, as I said yes to Jesus Christ that afternoon, the void I tried to fill for 30 years was instantly filled. I walked out of that auditorium with my eternal destiny secure. I knew that if I were to die that afternoon, I would spend eternity with my Savior. My wife and I got our lives back together a few days later. I returned home to my wife and son. Gentlemen, a good marriage is a union of two forgivers. A good marriage is not finding the right person. A good marriage is becoming the right person for your mate. And that's possible only through Jesus Christ. I was able to share the love of Jesus Christ with my mother 3 days later. Not many hours after I shared the love of Christ with my mother, she had a massive stroke and died, fell down a flight of stairs and hit her head, never regained consciousness. Gentlemen, death is not the end of the road. Death is a bend in the road. We're really not ready to live until we're ready to die, gentlemen. And that's why I'm going to ask you again, is your passport stamped for eternity? Is it stamped this morning? You don't know how much time you have. I don't know how much time I have. Well, Adolf Coors, that sounds good for you. I really don't need it. My business is going great guns. I'm making so much money down here. Life is just clicking for me right now. I don't need to hear this. I'll deal with God later. Yeah, you sure will. You sure will. But guys, it won't be on your terms. I'll guarantee you. 6 years ago in North Carolina, speaking to a group of business people just like this, just like you, a couple that evening came to hear me speak, a very wealthy couple. That evening prayed a prayer I'm going to pray in a few minutes with you. They prayed that prayer with me. They got into their automobile, leaving this beautiful country club to return home to their family just a few miles away. The gentlemen, they didn't make it home that night. They were hit broadside 3 blocks from that country club, and they went out into eternity. Can't be done on the other side. There's no coming back. There's no second chance. I want you to leave in the next 10 minutes. I want you to leave, gentlemen, knowing without a doubt where you're going to spend eternity. That's the gift I brought to you today. And to conclude my message with you this morning, just 2 years after I received Christ into my heart, in my life, in 1977, I walked into the very penitentiary where Joseph Corbett, the man who murdered my father in 1960, was serving a life sentence for murder. Gentlemen, you know hate will kill you. Hate will destroy you. And in 1977, through the help and through the love of Jesus Christ, I went into that prison to forgive the man who murdered my father in 1960. I'm a free man today because I surrendered my right to hate Joseph Corbett and turn it over to my God. And he'll do the same for you, gentlemen. He'll do the same for you. Every minute that you hate somebody is 60 seconds you'll never get back. In conclusion, guys, and I've spoken longer than I probably should have, but I want to just conclude with this message. You know, I've lived 55 years in this world. I've just shared with you a few of the mistakes I've made. I've made them all. The conclusion is simply this, gentlemen. In life, nothing really matters except a love for our God, beginning with His Son, Jesus Christ. A love for mankind, beginning right here with my family. Nothing else goes on into eternity with us. Nothing else. 2,000 years ago, a fact of history, Jesus Christ came down from heaven's glory in order to shed His precious blood for you and me. He didn't die for His own sin, guys. He didn't know any sin. But He took our sin with Him on that cross, and He died for you and me. And then He arose from the dead, a fact of history. He arose from the dead, ascended into heaven a few days later, and He is knocking on your hearts right now. You're Him knocking? Get real now, guys. Get real. Slow down. Do you hear Him knocking? That job really isn't doing it, is it? All this money isn't really doing it, is it, guys? Get honest. None of this stuff's going out with us. I buried my mother-in-law 3 days ago. Came back to her apartment. Her fur coats were still in the closet. Her money was still in the safe. It didn't go out with my mother-in-law. None of this is going with us, guys. And you've heard the truth this morning as I close. You've heard the truth. Jesus Christ says, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one gets to heaven but through me, He says. That's the truth. I want to ask you two questions. So what? So what? But then I want to ask you another question, sir. Now what? Now what? Because in life, gentlemen, crossing the finish line first makes no difference. If upon crossing that finish line, you suddenly discover that the race you've been running, look at these people who are running this race out here. You see them on the freeways every day, don't you? They're running a race. But you suddenly discover the race you've been running all these years is down the wrong track. I ran a race for 30 years down the wrong track. Stop running, guys. Be still. Let's look up. We can focus in on a line that's approximately 80 years long. A line that's involved in earthly success. We can focus in on that line. But I'm going to ask you this morning to focus in on a line that lasts for eternity. A line that's involved with God's success, true success. Have you done that? If you haven't, would you pray this very simple prayer with me now as we close? Would you close your eyes, please, gentlemen? I'm going to say this prayer very slowly. I'm going to say it out loud. I want you to pray this prayer with me right now in your seats. I want you to invite the God of this universe into your heart and life. And I want you to walk out of here this morning with your eternal destiny secure. Please pray this prayer with me. Lord Jesus, I need you. And by an act of my will, I open up the door of my heart and life. I receive you as my Savior and as my Lord. I understand that I am a sinful human being. I know that. But I thank you for forgiving all of my sin, all of my pride, all of my rebellion through your death on that cross. Take control of my life this morning and make me into the kind of person you created me to be from eternity past. And thank you for coming into my heart and my life and granting me eternity with you in heaven as you have promised me. It's in Jesus Christ's name that I do pray. Amen. I want you to... I need 30 more seconds of your time before we dismiss. The gathering has asked me to get your reaction about what you heard from me this morning. At the center of every table, there is an envelope with somebody at each table. Pass out this little card I have in my hand. It's a little comment card. I want each one to have a card in front of them, if you would, please. And I'll wait until that happens. And while you're doing that, I want to thank the gathering for inviting me. Would each person have a card in front of them? This is very important. And with this, we're gonna wrap things up. But we want to get your reaction this morning, gentlemen, about what you heard. Just take a few moments to go through this card with me. And I'll go slowly so we have time to get your reaction. Everybody have a card now? Please, gentlemen, put your name, if you would, please. Your first and your last name, your address, your phone number, if you would. If you have a fax and an email address, please put that down. I can assure you guys one thing. I don't like to be put on mailing lists, and I know you don't either. You are not going to be hounded by anybody here. This is strictly for the gathering's information so we can make this breakfast better for you next time. These cards, gentlemen, will be private. I can assure you of that. You're not going to be put on anybody's mailing list. Now, the next part of this card is very important. There are four options, one of which might reflect your reaction to my comments this morning. The one says, I want to know more about what it means to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Maybe some of you this morning heard some things that you're really not quite sure about. There's still some information that you'd like to have to put all of this together, and that's fine. If that's true of you, we'd like to get some very important information into your hands. Your host of the gathering will help you in that process to learn more about what it means to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. That's the first box. I did pray today, but I want to know more about what it means to have a personal relationship. I didn't pray this morning. That's fine. But I want to know more about what Adolf Kurz said. Check that top box, please, gentlemen. The second box very simply says, I pray today to accept Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior so that I can enjoy a relationship with Him for eternity. If you prayed that prayer with me for the first time this morning, gentlemen, I commend you on the most important decision you will ever make. Would you check that second box, please? And then thirdly, I have attended church and would like some help in developing a closer relationship with Jesus Christ. This may be you. This may not be the beginning of your spiritual walk, but you'd like to know more. Maybe you've been somewhat inconsistent in your Christian walk. That's many of you. And would like to have somebody to help you in your discipleship process. Check that third box, please, gentlemen. And the fourth box says, I'm involved in a weekly Bible study and would like to have additional help in developing my relationship with Jesus Christ. If that's you, check that fourth box. And then you'll notice there are two little boxes on the bottom of this card. If you'd like to be involved in leadership, check that box as contact about leadership role in this great ministry. If you want to be put on the mailing list of the gathering so you know when future events are going to happen just like this, please check the mailing list box in the bottom right-hand corner. And then use the back of the card if you want to put down comments about this morning's breakfast. Anything you want to say, good or bad, we want to know your comments. It helps the gathering in making this breakfast better for you the next time. I'm going to invite Paul Huddle to come back up and to close things out. And gentlemen, I truly appreciate your time this morning. I'll never forget you as long as I live. And I trust you'll never forget the words I've spoken to you. God bless you all. Thank you.